As you say, Khaleesi, we will watch you as you go. It was good to hear men speaking Valyrian once more, and even the common tongue, Danny thought, as they approached the first ship. Sailors, dock workers, and merchants alike gave way before her, not knowing what to make of the slim young girl with silver-gold hair, who dressed in the Dothraki fashion and walked with a knight at her side. Despite the heat of the day, Ser Jorah wore his green wool surcoat over chainmail, the black bear of Mormont sewn on his chest. But neither her beauty nor his size and strength would serve with the men whose ships they needed. "You require passage for 100 Dothraki, all their horses, yourself and this knight, and 3 dragons," said the captain of the great Cog, ardent friend, before he walked away laughing. When she told Elisini on the trumpeter that she was Daenerys Stormborn, Queen of the Seven Kingdoms, he gave her a dead-faced look and said, "Aye, and I'm Lord Tywin Lannister, and shit gold every night." The cargo master of the Moorish galley, Silken Spirit, opined that dragons were too dangerous at sea, where any stray breath of flame might set the rigging afire. The owner of Lord Faro's belly would risk dragons, but not Dothraki. "I'll have no such godless savages in my belly, I'll not." The two brothers who captained the sister ships, Quicksilver and Greyhound, seemed sympathetic and invited them into the cabin for a glass of Arbor Red. They were so courteous that Danny was hopeful for a time, but in the end, the price they asked was far beyond her means and might have been beyond Zara's. Pinchbottom Petto and Slow-Eyed Maid were too small for her needs. Bravo was bound for the Jade Sea, and Magister Manolo scarce looked seaworthy. As they made their way toward the next quay, Ser Jorah laid a hand against the small of her back. "Your Grace, you're being followed. No, do not turn." He guided her gently towards a brass seller's booth. "This is a noble work, my queen," he proclaimed loudly, lifting a large platter for her inspection. "See how it shines in the sun." The brass was polished to a high sheen. Danny could see her face in it, and when Ser Jorah angled it to the right, she could see behind her. "I see a fat brown man and an older man with a staff. Which is it?"
"Both of them," Ser Jorah said. "They have been following us since we left Quicksilver."
The ripples in the brass stretched the strangers queerly, making one man seem long and gaunt, the other immensely squat and broad.
"A most excellent brass, great lady," the merchant exclaimed. "Bright as the sun, and for the mother of dragons, only 30 others."
The platter was not worth more than 3. "Where are my guards?" Danny declared. "This man is trying to rob me." For Jorah, she lowered her voice and spoke in the common tongue.
"They may not mean me ill. Men have looked at women since time began. Perhaps it's no more than that."
The brass seller ignored their whispers.
30, did I say 30? Oh, such a fool I am. The price is 20 honors.
"All the brass in this booth is not worth 20 honors," Danny told him as she studied the reflections. The old man had the look of Westeros about him, and the brown-skinned one must weigh 20 stone. "The usurper offered a lordship to the man who kills me, and these two are far from home. Or could they be creatures of the warlocks, meant to take me unawares?"
10, Khaleesi, because you are so lovely. Huh? Use it for a looking glass. Only brass this fine could capture such beauty.
It might serve to carry night soil. If you threw it away, I might pick it up, so long as I did not need to stoop. But pay for it? Danny shoved the platter back into his hands. "Worms have crawled up your nose and eaten your wits."
8 honors, he cried. "My wife will beat me and call me a fool, but I am a helpless child in your hands. Come, 8. That is less than it is worth."
"What do I need with dull brass when Zaro, Zoan Daxus feeds me off plates of gold?" As she turned to walk off, Danny let her glance sweep over the strangers. The brown man
was near as wide as he looked in the platter, with a gleaming bald head and the smooth cheeks of a eunuch. A long, curving arrack was thrust through the sweat-stained yellow silk of his belly band. Above the silk, he was naked, but for an absurdly tiny iron-studded vest. Old scars crisscrossed his tree-trunk arms, huge chest, and massive belly, pale against his nut-brown skin. The other man wore a traveller's cloak of undyed wool, the hood thrown back. Long white hair fell to his shoulders, and a silky white beard covered the lower half of his face. He leaned his weight on a hardwood staff, as tall as he was. Only fools would stare so openly if they meant me harm. All the same, it might be prudent to head back toward Jogo and Ego. "The old man does not wear a sword," she said to Jorah in the common tongue, as she drew him away. The brass merchant came hopping after them.
"Five honors for five. It is yours. It was meant for you."
Sir Jorah said,
"A hardwood staff can crack a skull as well as any mace."
"Four. I know you want it."
He danced in front of them, scampering backward as he thrust the platter at their faces. "Do they follow?"
"Lift that up a little higher,"
the knight told the merchant.
"Yes. The old man pretends to linger at a potter's stall, but the brown one has eyes only for you."
"Two honors. Two. Two."
The merchant was panting heavily from the effort of running backward. "Pay him before he kills himself," Danny told Sir Jorah, wondering what she was going to do with a huge brass platter. She turned back as he reached for his coins, intending to put an end to this mummer's farce. The blood of the dragon would not be herded through a bazaar by an old man and a fat eunuch. A Carthene stepped into her path.
"A mother of dragons for you."
He knelt and thrust a jewel box into her face. Danny took it almost by reflex. The box was carved wood, its mother-of-pearl lid inlaid with jasper and chalcedony. "You are too generous." She opened it. Within was a glittering green scarab carved from onyx and emerald. Beautiful, she thought. This will help pay our passage. As she reached inside the box, the man said,
"I'm so sorry."
But she hardly heard. The scarab unfolded with a hiss. Danny caught a glimpse of a malign black face, almost human, and an arched tail dripping venom. And then the box flew from her hand in pieces, turning end over end. Sudden pain twisted her fingers. As she cried out and clutched her hand, the brass merchant let out a shriek. A woman screamed, and suddenly the Carthene were shouting and pushing each other aside. Sir Jorah slammed past her, and Danny stumbled to one knee. She heard the hiss again. The old man drove the butt of his staff into the ground. Ego came riding through an egg seller stall and vaulted from his saddle. Jogo's whip cracked overhead. Sir Jorah slammed the eunuch over the head with a brass platter. Sailors and whores and merchants were fleeing or shouting, or both.
"Your grace, a thousand pardons,"
the old man knelt.
"It's dead. Did I break your end?"
She closed her fingers, wincing. "I don't think so."
"I had to knock it away."
He started, but her blood riders were on him before he could finish. Ego kicked his staff away, and Jogo seized him around the shoulders, forced him to his knees, and pressed a dagger to his throat. "Khaleesi, we saw him strike you. Would you see the color of his blood? Release him." Danny climbed to her feet. "Look at the bottom of his staff. Blood of my blood." Sir Jorah had been shoved off his feet by the eunuch. She ran between them as Arrak and Longsword both came flashing from their sheaths. "Put down your steel. Stop it."
"Your grace," Mormont lowered his sword only an inch. "These men attacked you."
"They were defending me." Danny snapped her hand to shake the sting from her fingers. "It was the other one, the Carthene." When she looked around, he was gone. He was a sorrowful man. "There was a manticore in that jewel box he gave me. This man knocked it out of my hand." The brass merchant was still rolling on the ground. She went to him and helped him to his feet. "Were you stung?"
No, good lady, he said, shaking, or else I will be dead. But it touched me. When it fell from the box, it landed on my arm.
He had soiled himself, she saw, and no wonder. She gave him a silver for his trouble and sent him on his way before she turned back to the old man with a white beard. Who is it that I owe my life to?
You owe me nothing, your grace. I am called Arst, and though Belwas named me Whitebeard on the voyage here.
Though Jogo had released him, the old man remained on one knee. Ego picked up his staff, turned it over, cursed softly in Dothraki, scraped the remains of the manticore off on a stone and handed it back. And who is Belwas? She asked. The huge brown eunuch swaggered forward, sheathing his arak.
I am Belwas. Strong Belwas they name me in the fighting pits of Marine. Never did I lose.
He slapped his belly, covered with scars.
I let each man cut me once before I kill him. Count the cuts and you will know how many strong Belwas are slain.
Danny had no need to count his scars. There were many. She could see at a glance. And why are you here, strong Belwas?
From Marine I am sold to Cahor, and then to Pentas, and the fat man with sweet stink in his hair. He it was who sent strong Belwas back across the sea, and old white beard to serve him.
The fat man with sweet stink in his hair. Illyrio, she said. You were sent by Magister Illyrio?
We were, your grace,
old Whitebeard replied.
The Magister begs your kind indulgence for sending us in his stead. But he cannot sit a horse as he did in his youth, and sea travel upsets his digestion.
Earlier had spoken in the Valyrian of the Free Cities, but now he changed to the common tongue.
I regret if we caused you alarm. If truth be told, we were not certain. We expected someone more...
Regal? Danny laughed. She had no dragon with her, and her raiment was hardly queenly. You speak the common tongue well, asked Han. Are you of Westeros?
I am. I was born on the Dornish marches, your grace. As a boy, I squired for a knight of Lord Swan's household.
He held the tall staff upright beside him, like a lance in need of a banner.
Now I squire for Belwas.
A bit old for such, aren't you?
Sir Jorah had shouldered his way to her side, holding the brass platter awkwardly under his arm. Belwas's hard head had left it badly bent.
Not too old to serve my liege, Lord Mormont. Oh, you know me as well. I saw you fight a time or two. At Lannisport, when you near on horse the Kingslayer, and on pike, there as well. You do not recall Lord Mormont?
Sir Jorah frowned.
Your face seems familiar, but there were hundreds at Lannisport and thousands on pike, and I am no lord. Bear Island was taken from me. I am but a knight.
A knight of my Queen's Guard, Danny took his arm, and my true friend and good counselor. She studied Arston's face. He had a great dignity to him, a quiet strength she liked. Rise, Arston Whitebeard. Be welcome, strong Belwas. Sir Jorah, you know, Co-Ego and Co-Jogo are blood of my blood. They crossed the Red Waste with me and saw my dragons born.
Horse of boys, Belwas grinned toothily. Belwas has killed many horse of boys in the fighting pits. They jingle when they die.
Ego's arrow leapt to his hand.
Never have I killed a fat brown man. Belwas will be the first. Sheathe your steel, blood of my blood, said Danny.
This man comes to serve me. Belwas, you will accord all respect to my people, or you will leave my service sooner than you'd wish, and with more scars than when you came. The gap-toothed smile faded from the giant's broad brown face, replaced by a confused scowl. Men did not often threaten Belwas, it would seem, and less so girls a third his size. Danny gave him a smile to take a bit of the sting from the rebuke. Now tell me, what would Magister Illyrio have of me that he would send you all the way from Pentos?
He would have dragons, said Belwas gruffly. And the girl who makes them, he would have you.
Belwas has the truth of us, your grace, said Arstan. We were told to find you and bring you back to Pentos. The Seven Kingdoms have need of you. Robert the Usurper is dead and the realm bleeds. When we set sail from Pentos, there were four kings in the land and no justice to be had.
Joy bloomed in her heart, but Danny kept it from her face. I have three dragons, she said, and more than 100 in my Khalasar, with all their goods and horses.
It is no matter, boomed Belwas. We take all. The fat man hires three ships for his little silver-haired queen.
It is so, your grace,
Arstan Whitebeard said.
The great cog, Sir Dulian, is berthed at the end of the quay, and the galleys, Summer Sun, and Jozo's prank are anchored beyond the breakwater.
Three heads has the dragon, Danny thought, wondering. I shall tell my people to make ready to depart at once, but the ships that bring me home must bear different names.
As you wish, said Arstan. What names would you prefer?
Vhagar, Daenerys told him, Meraxes, and Balerion. Paint the names on their hulls in golden letters 3 feet high, Arstan. I want every man who sees them to know the dragons are returned. Arya. The heads had been dipped in tar to slow the rot. Every morning when Arya went to the well to draw fresh water for Roose Bolton's basin, she had to pass beneath them. They faced outward, so she never saw their faces. But she liked to pretend that one of them was Joffrey. She tried to picture how his pretty face would look dipped in tar. If I was a crow, I could fly down and peck off his stupid, fat, pouty lips. The heads never lacked for attendance. The carrion crows wheeled about the gatehouse in raucous unkindness and quarreled upon the ramparts over each eye, screaming and cawing at each other and taking to the air whenever a sentry passed along the battlements. Sometimes the maester's ravens joined the feast as well, flapping down from the rookery on wide black wings. When the ravens came, the crows would scatter, only to return the moment the larger birds were gone. Do the ravens remember Maester Tothmuir? Arya wondered. Are they sad for him? When they quark at him, do they wonder why he doesn't answer? Perhaps the dead could speak to them in some secret tongue the living could not hear. Tothmuir had been sent to the axe for dispatching birds to Castle Rock and King's Landing the night Harrenhal had fallen, Lucan the armorer for making weapons for the Lannisters, Goodwife Hera for telling Lady Wendt's household to serve them, the steward for giving Lord Tywin the keys to the treasure vault. The cook was spared, some said, because he made the weasel soup, but stocks were hammered together for Pretty Pyre and the other women who'd shared their favors with Lannister soldiers. Stripped and shaved, they were left in the middle ward beside the bear pit, free for the use of any man who wanted them. Three Frey men-at-arms were using them that morning as Arya went to the well. She tried not to look, but she could hear the men laughing. The pail was very heavy, once full. She was turning to bring it back to Kingspire when Goodwife Amabel seized her arm. The water went slushing over the side onto Amabel's legs.
You did it on purpose,
the woman screeched. What do you want? Arya squirmed in her grasp. Amabel had been half-crazed since they'd cut Hara's head off.
See there?
Amabel pointed across the yard at Pyre.
When this Northman falls, you'll be where she is.
Let me go. She tried to wrench free, but Amabel only tightened her fingers.
He will fall too. Harrenhal pulls them all down in the end. Lord Tywin's one now. He'll be marching back with all his powers, and then it will be his turn to punish the disloyal. And don't think he won't know what you did.
The old woman laughed.
I may have a turn at you myself. Ara's had an old broom. I'll save it for you. The handle's cracked and splintery.
Arya swung the bucket. The weight of the water made it turn in her hand, so she didn't smash Amabel's head in as she wanted. But the woman let go of her anyway when the water came out and drenched her. Don't ever touch me, Arya shouted, or I'll kill you. You get away. Supping, Goodwife Amabel jabbed a thin finger at the flayed man on the front of Arya's tunic.
You think you're safe with that little bloody man on your tit, but you're not. The Lannisters are coming. See what happens when they get here.
3/4 of the water had splashed out on the ground, so Arya had to return to the well. If I told Lord Bolton what she'd said, her head would be up next to Hara's before it got dark, she thought as she drew up the bucket again. She wouldn't, though. Once, when there had been only half as many heads, Gendry had caught Arya looking at them.
Admiring your work? He asked.
He was angry because he'd liked Lucan, she knew, but it still wasn't fair. It's still Shanks Walton's work, she said defensively, and the Mummers, and Lord Bolton.
And who gave us all them? You and your weasel soup.
Arya punched his arm. It was just hot broth. You hated Sir Aemery, too.
I ate this lot worse. Sir Aemery was fighting for his lord, but the Mummers are sellswords and turncloaks. Half of them can't even speak the common tongue. Septonot likes little boys. Kyburn does black magic. And your friend Biter eats people.
The worst thing was, she couldn't even say he was wrong. The brave companions did most of the foraging for Harrenhal, and Roose Bolton had given them the task of rooting out Lannisters. Vargo Hoat had divided them into 4 bands to visit as many villages as possible. He led the largest group himself and gave the others to his most trusted captains. She had heard Rorg laughing over Lord Vargo's way of finding traitors. All he did was return to places he had visited before under Lord Tywin's banner and seize those who had helped him. Many had been bought with Lannister silver, so the Mummers often returned with bags of coin as well as baskets of heads.
A riddle, Shagwell would shout gleefully. If Lord Bolton's goat eats the men who fed Lord Lannister's goat, how many goats are there?
1, Arya said, when he asked her.
No, there's a weasel, clever as a goat.
The fool tittered. Rorg and Biter were as bad as the others. Whenever Lord Bolton took a meal with the garrison, Arya would see them there among the rest. Biter gave off a stench like bad cheese, so the brave companions made him sit down near the foot of the table, where he could grunt and hiss to himself and tear his meat apart with fingers and teeth. He would sniff at Arya when she passed, but it was Rorg who scared her most. He sat up near faithful Urswick, but she could feel his eyes crawling over her as she went about her duties. Sometimes she wished she had gone off across the narrow sea with Jake and Hagar. She still had the stupid coin he'd given her, a piece of iron no larger than a penny and rusted along the rim. One side had writing on it, queer words she could not read. The other showed a man's head, but so worn that all his features had rubbed off. He said it was of great value, but that was probably a lie too, like his name and even his face. That made her so angry that she threw the coin away. But after an hour, she got to feeling bad and went and found it again, even though it wasn't worth anything. She was thinking about the coin as she crossed the flowstone yard, struggling with the weight of the water in her pail. Nan, a voice called out, put down that pail and come and help me. Elmar Frey was no older than she was, and short for his age besides. He had been rolling a barrel of sand across the uneven stone and was red-faced from exertion. Arya went to help him. Together, they pushed the barrel all the way to the wall and back again, then stood it upright. She could hear the sand shifting around inside as Elmar pried open the lid and pulled out a chainmail hauberk. Do you think it's clean enough? As Roose Bolton's squire, it was his task to keep the mail shiny bright. You need to shake out the sand. There's still spots of rust, see? She pointed. You'd best do it again. You do it. Elmar could be friendly when he needed help, but afterward, he would always remember that he was a squire and she was only a serving girl. He liked to boast how he was a son of the Lord of the Crossing. Not a nephew or a bastard or a grandson, but a true-born son. And on account of that, he was going to marry a princess. Arya didn't care about his precious princess and didn't like him giving her commands. I have to bring my lord water for his basin. He's in his bedchamber being leeched. Not the regular black leeches, but the big pale ones. Elmer's eyes got as big as boiled eggs. Leeches terrified him, especially the big pale ones that looked like jelly until they filled up with blood. I forgot you're too skinny to push such a heavy barrel. I forgot you're stupid. Arya picked up the pail. Maybe you should get leeched too. There's leeches in the neck as big as pigs. She left him there with his barrel. The Lord's bedchamber was crowded when she entered. Qyburn was in attendance, and Dua Walton, in his mail shirt and greaves, plus a dozen Freys, all brothers, half-brothers and cousins. Roose Bolton lay abed, naked. Leeches clung to the inside of his arms and legs and dotted his pallid chest, long, translucent things that turned a glistening pink as they fed. Bolton paid them no more mind than he did Arya.
We must not allow Lord Tywin to trap us here in Harrenhal, Sir Aenys Frey was saying as Arya filled the wash basin.
A grey-stooped giant of a man with watery red eyes and huge, gnarled hands. Sir Aenys had brought 1,500 Frey swords south to Harrenhal, yet it often seemed as if he were helpless to command even his own brothers.
The castle is so large it requires an army to hold it, and once surrounded, we cannot feed an army, nor can we hope to lay in sufficient supplies. The country is ash, the villages given over to wolves, the harvest burnt or stolen. Autumn is on us, yet there is no food in store and none being planted. We live on forage, and if the Lannisters deny that to us, we will be down to rats and shoe leather in a moon's turn.
I do not mean to be besieged here.
Roose Bolton's voice was so soft that men had to strain to hear it, so his chambers were always strangely hushed.
What then? Demanded Sir Jared Frey, who was lean, balding, and pockmarked. Is Edmure Tully so drunk on his victory that he thinks to give Lord Tywin battle in the open field?
If he does, he'll beat them, Arya thought. He'll beat them, as he did on the Red Fork, you'll see. Unnoticed, she went to stand by Qyburn.
Lord Tywin is many leagues from here, Bolton said calmly. He has many matters yet to settle at King's Landing. He will not march on Harrenhal for some time.
Sir Aenys shook his head stubbornly.
You do not know the Lannisters as we do, my lord. King Stannis thought that Lord Tywin was 1,000 leagues away as well, and it undid him.
The pale man in the bed smiled faintly as the leeches nursed of his blood.
I am not a man to be undone, sir.
Even if River Run marshals all its strength, and the young wolf wins back from the west, how can we hope to match the numbers Lord Tywin can send against us? When he comes, he will come with far more power than he commanded on the Green Fork. Highgarden has joined itself to Joffrey's cause, I remind you.
I had not forgotten. I have been Lord Tywin's captive once, said Sir Hustine, a husky man with a square face, who was said to be the strongest of the Freys. I have no wish to enjoy Lannister hospitality again.
Sir Harrys Haeg, who was a Frey on his mother's side, nodded vigorously.
If Lord Tywin could defeat a seasoned man like Stannis Baratheon,
What chance will our boy king have against him?
He looked round to his brothers and cousins for support, and several of them muttered agreement.
Someone must have the courage to say it,
Sir Hustine said.
The war is lost. King Rob must be made to see that.
Roose Bolton studied him with pale eyes.
His Grace has defeated the Lannisters every time he has faced them in battle.
He has lost the North, insisted Hustine Frey. He has lost Winterfell. His brothers are dead.
For a moment, Arya forgot to breathe.
Dead? Bran? Henrikin? Dead? What does he mean? What does he mean about Winterfell? Joffrey could never take Winterfell, never. Rob would never let him.
Then she remembered that Rob was not at Winterfell. He was away in the west, and Bran was crippled, and Rickon only 4. It took all her strength to remain still and silent, the way Cyrio Forel had taught her, to stand there like a stick of furniture. She felt tears gathering in her eyes and willed them away.
It's not true. It can't be true. It's just some Lannister lie.
Had Stannis won, all might have been different,
Ronald Rivers said wistfully. He was one of Lord Walder's bastards.
Stannis lost, Sir Hustin said bluntly. Wishing it were otherwise will not make it so. King Rob must make his peace with the Lannisters. He must put off his crown and bend the knee, little as he may like it.
And who will tell him so?
Roose Bolton smiled.
It is a fine thing to have so many valiant brothers in such troubled times. I shall think on all you've said.
His smile was dismissal. The Freys made their courtesies and shuffled out, leaving only Qyburn, Steelshanks Walton, and Arya. Lord Bolton beckoned her closer.
I am bled sufficiently, Nan. You may remove the leeches.
At once, my lord. It was best never to make Roose Bolton ask twice. Arya wanted to ask him what Sir Hustine had meant about Winterfell, but she dared not. I'll ask Elmer, she thought. Elmer will tell me. The leeches wriggled slowly between her fingers as she plucked them carefully from the lord's body, their pale bodies moist to the touch and distended with blood. They're only leeches, she reminded herself. If I close my hand, they'd squish between my fingers.
There is a letter from your lady wife.
Qyburn pulled a roll of parchment from his sleeve. Though he wore maester's robes, there was no chain about his neck. It was whispered that he had lost it for dabbling in necromancy.
You may read it, Bolton said.
The Lady Walder wrote from the twins almost every day, but all the letters were the same. I pray for you morning, noon, and night, my sweet lord, she wrote, and count the days until you share my bed again. Return to me soon, and I will give you many true-born sons to take the place of your dear Dummerick and rule the dread fort after you. Arya pictured a plump pink baby in a cradle covered with plump pink leeches. She brought Lord Bolton a damp washcloth to wipe down his soft, hairless body.
I will send a letter of my own, he told the one-time maester.
To the Lady Walder.
To Sir Helman Tallheart.
A rider from Sir Helman had come 2 days past. Tallheart men had taken the castle of the Dairies, accepting the surrender of its Lannister garrison after a brief siege.
Tell him to put the captives to the sword and the castle to the torch by command of the king. And then he is to join forces with Robert Glover and strike east towards Duskendale. Those are rich lands and hardly touched by the fighting. It is time they had a taste. Glover has lost a castle and Tallheart a son. Let them take their vengeance on Duskendale.
I shall prepare the message for your seal, my lord.
Arya was glad to hear that the castle of the Dairies would be burnt. That was where they'd brought her when she'd been caught after a fight with Joffrey, and where the queen had made her father kill Sansa's wolf. It deserves to burn. She wished that Robert Glover and Sir Helman Tallheart would come back to Harrenhal, though. They had marched too quickly before she'd been able to decide whether to trust them with her secret.
I will hunt today, Roose Bolton announced, as Qyburn helped him into a quilted jerkin.
Is it safe, my lord?
Qyburn asked.
Only 3 days past, Septon Utt's men were attacked by wolves. They came right into his camp, not 5 yards from the fire, and killed 2 horses.
It is wolves I mean to hunt. I can scarcely sleep at night for their howling.
Bolton buckled on his belt, adjusting the hang of sword and dagger.
It said that direwolves once roamed the north in great packs of 100 or more, and feared neither man nor mammoth. But that was long ago, and in another land. It is queer to see the common wolves of the south so bold.
Terrible times breed terrible things, my lord.
Bolton showed his teeth in something that might have been a smile.
Are these times so terrible, maester?
A summer is gone, and there are 4 kings in the realm.
One king may be terrible, but 4, he shrugged. Nan, my fur cloak.
She brought it to him.
My chambers will be clean and orderly upon my return, he told her as she fastened it, and tend to Lady Walder's letter.
As you say, my lord. The lord and maester swept from the room, giving her not so much as a backward glance. When they were gone, Arya took the letter and carried it to the hearth, stirring the logs with a poker to wake the flames anew. She watched the parchment twist, blacken, and flare up. If the Lannisters hurt Bran and Rickon, Rob will kill them, everyone. He'll never bend the knee. Never, never, never. He's not afraid of any of them. Curls of ash floated up the chimney. Arya squatted beside the fire, watching them rise through a veil of hot tears. If Winterfell is truly gone, is this my home now? Am I still Arya, or only Nan, the serving girl? Forever and forever and forever. She spent the next few hours tending to the lord's chambers. She swept out the old rushes and scattered fresh, sweet-smelling ones, laid a fresh fire in the hearth, changed the linens and fluffed the feather bed, emptied the chamber pots down the privy shaft and scrubbed them out, carried an armload of soiled clothing to the washerwomen and brought up a bowl of crisp autumn pears from the kitchen. When she was done with the bedchamber, she went down half a flight of stairs to do the same in the great solar, a spare draughty room as large as the halls of many a smaller castle. The candles were down to stubs, so Arya changed them out. Under the windows was a huge oaken table where the lord wrote his letters. She stacked the books, changed the candles, put the quills and inks and sealing wax in order. A large ragged sheepskin was tossed across the papers. Arya had started to roll it up when the colours caught her eye. The blue of lakes and rivers, the red dots where castles and cities could be found, the green of woods. She spread it out instead. The lands of the Trident, said the ornate script beneath the map. The drawing showed everything from the neck to the Blackwater Rush. There's Harrenhal, at the top of the big lake, she realised. But where's Riverrun? Then she saw. It's not so far. The afternoon was still young by the time she was done, so Arya took herself off to the Godswood. Her duties were lighter as Lord Bolton's cupbearer than they had been under Weiss or even Pink Eye, though they required dressing like a page and washing more than she liked. The hunt would not return for hours, so she had a little time for her needlework. She slashed at birch leaves till the splintery point of the broken broomstick was green and sticky. Sir Gregor, she breathed, Dunson, Polliver, Raff the Sweetling. She spun and leapt and balanced on the balls of her feet, darting this way and that, knocking pine cones flying. The Tickler, she called out one time, the Hound the next, Sir Ilion, Sir Merrin, Queen Cersei. The bole of an oak loomed before her, and she lunged to drive her point through it, grunting, Joffrey! 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 Her arms and legs were dappled by sunlight and the shadows of leaves. A sheen of sweat covered her skin by the time she paused. The heel of her right foot was bloody where she'd skinned it, so she stood one-legged before the heart tree and raised her sword in salute. Vela Morgulis, she told the old gods of the north. She liked how the words sounded when she said them. As Arya crossed the yard to the bathhouse, she spied a raven circling down toward the rookery and wondered where it come from and what message it carried. Might be it's from Rob, come to say it wasn't true about Bran and Rickon. She chewed on her lip, hoping. If I had wings, I could fly back to Winterfell and see for myself. And if it was true, I'd just fly away. Fly up past the moon and the shining stars and see all the things in old Nan's stories, dragons and sea monsters and the Titan of Braavos. And maybe I wouldn't ever fly back, unless I wanted to. The hunting party returned near Evenfall with 9 dead wolves. 7 were adults, big grey-brown beasts, savage and powerful, their mouths drawn back over long yellow teeth by their dying snarls. But the other 2 had only been pups. Lord Bolton gave orders for the skins to be sewn into a blanket for his bed.
Cubs still have that soft fur, my lord, one of his men pointed out. Make you a nice warm pair of gloves.
Bolton glanced up at the banners waving above the gatehouse towers. As the Starks won't remind us, winter is coming. Have it done. When he saw Arya looking on, he said, Nan, I want a flagon of hot spice wine. I took a chill in the woods. See that it doesn't get cold. I'm of a mind to sup alone. Barley bread, butter and boar. At once, my lord. That was always the best thing to say. Hot Pie was making oat cakes when she entered the kitchen. 3 other cooks were boning fish, while a spit boy turned a boar over the flames. My lord wants his supper and hot spiced wine to wash it down, Arya announced, and he doesn't want it cold. One of the cooks washed his hands, took out a kettle, and filled it with a heavy, sweet red. Hot Pie was told to crumble in the spices as the wine heated. Arya went to help.
I can do it, he said sullenly. I don't need you to show me how to spice wine.
He hates me too, or else he's scared of me. She backed away, more sad than angry. When the food was ready, the cooks covered it with a silver cover and wrapped the flagon in a thick towel to keep it warm. Dusk was settling outside. On the walls, the crows muttered round the heads, like courtiers round the king. One of the guards held the door to King's Pyre.
Hope that's not weasel soup, he jested.
Roose Bolton was seated by the hearth, reading from a thick leather-bound book when she entered.
Light some candles, he commanded her as he turned a page. It grows gloomy in here.
She placed the food at his elbow and did as he bid, filling the room with flickering light and the scent of cloves. Bolton turned a few more pages with his finger, then closed the book and placed it carefully in the fire. He watched the flames consume it, pale eyes shining with reflected light. The old dry leather went up with a whoosh, and the yellow pages stirred as they burned, as if some ghost were reading them.
I will have no further need you tonight, he said, never looking at her.
She should have gone, silent as a mouse. But something had hold of her. My lord, she asked, will you take me with you when you leave Harrenhal? He turned to stare at her, and from the look in his eyes, it was as if his supper had just spoken to him.
Did I give you leave to question me, Nan?
No, my lord. She lowered her eyes.
You should not have spoken then, should you?
No, my lord. For a moment, he looked amused.
I will answer you, just this once. I mean to give Harrenhal to Lord Vargo when I return to the north. You will remain here with him.
But I don't, she started. He cut her off.
I am not in the habit of being questioned by servants, Ned. Must I have your tongue out?
He would do it as easily as another man might cuff a dog, she knew.
No, my lord. Then I'll hear no more from you. No, my lord. Go then. I shall forget this insolence.
Arya went, but not to her bed. When she stepped out into the darkness of the yard, the guard on the door nodded at her and said,
"Storm's coming. Smell the air?"
The wind was gusting. Flames swirling off the torches mounted atop the walls beside the rows of heads. On her way to the Godswood, she passed a wailing tower, where once she had lived in fear of Wys. The Freys had taken it for their own since Harrenhal's fall. She could hear angry voices coming from a window. Many men talking and arguing all at once. Elmar was sitting on the steps outside alone. "What's wrong?" Arya asked him when she saw the tears shining on his cheeks.
"My princess," he sobbed. "We've been dishonored. Aenys says there was a bird from the twins. My lord father says I'll need to marry someone else or be a septon."
"A stupid princess," she thought. "That's nothing to cry over." "My brothers might be dead," she confided. Elmer gave her a scornful look.
"No one cares about a serving girl's brothers."
It was hard not to hit him when he said that. "I hope your princess dies," she said, and ran off before he could grab her. In the guard's wood, she found her broomstick sword where she had left it and carried it to the heart tree. There she knelt. Red leaves rustled. Red eyes peered inside her. The eyes of the gods. "Tell me what to do, you gods," she prayed. For a long moment, there was no sound but the wind and the water and the creak of leaf and limb. And then, far, far off, beyond the godswood and the haunted towers and the immense stone walls of Harrenhal, from somewhere out in the world, came the long, lonely howl of a wolf. Goose prickles rose on Arya's skin, and for an instant she felt dizzy. Then, so faintly, it seemed as if she heard her father's voice. "When the snows fall and the white winds blow, the lone wolf dies, but the pack survives," he said. "But there is no pack," she whispered to the weirwood. Bran and Rickon were dead. The Lannisters had Sansa. John had gone to the wall. "I'm not even me now. I'm Nan."
"You are Arya of Winterfell, daughter of the North. You told me you could be strong. You have the wolf blood in you."
The wolf blood. Arya remembered now. "I'll be as strong as Rob. I said I would."
She took a deep breath, then lifted the broomstick in both hands and brought it down across her knee. It broke with a loud crack, and she threw the pieces aside.
"I am a direwolf, and done with wooden teeth."
That night, she lay in her narrow bed upon the scratchy straw, listening to the voices of the living and the dead whisper and argue as she waited for the moon to rise. They were the only voices she trusted anymore. She could hear the sound of her own breath, and the wolves as well, a great pack of them now. "They are closer than the one I heard in the Godswood," she thought. "They are calling to me." Finally, she slipped from under the blanket, wriggled into a tunic, and padded barefoot down the stairs. Roose Bolton was a cautious man, and the entrance to King's Pyre was guarded day and night, so she had to slip out of a narrow cellar window. The yard was still, the great castle lost in haunted dreams. Above, the wind keen through the wailing tower. At the forge, she found the fires extinguished and the doors closed and barred. She crept in a window, as she had once before. Gendry shared a mattress with two other apprentice smiths. She crouched in the loft for a long time before her eyes adjusted enough for her to be sure that he was the one on the end. Then she put a hand over his mouth and pinched him. his eyes opened. He could not have been very deeply asleep.
Please, she whispered.
She took a hand off his mouth and pointed. For a moment, she did not think he understood, but then he slid out from under the blankets. Naked, he padded across the room, shrugged into a loose, rough-spun tunic, and climbed down from the loft after her. The other sleepers did not stir.
What do you want now?
Gendry said in a low, angry voice.
A sword. Black Thumb keeps all the blades locked up. I told you that 100 times. Is this for Lord Leech?
For me.
Break the lock with your hammer. They'll break my hand, he grumbled, or worse.
Not if you run off with me.
Run, and they'll catch you and kill you.
They'll do you worse. Lord Bolton is giving Harrenhal to the bloody mummers. He told me so. Gendry pushed black hair out of his eyes.
So?
She looked right at him, fearless. So when Varga hoats the Lord, he's going to cut off the feet of all the servants to keep them from running away. The smiths, too.
That's only a story, he said scornfully.
No, it's true. I heard Lord Varga say so, she lied. He's going to cut 1 foot off everyone, the left one. Go to the kitchens and wake Hot Pie, and he'll do what you say. We'll need bread or oatcakes or something. You get the swords, and I'll do the horses. We'll meet near the postern in the east wall, behind the Tower of Ghosts. No one ever comes there. I know that gate. It's guarded, same as the rest.
So? You won't forget the swords?
I never said I'd come.
No.
But if you do, you won't forget the swords. He frowned.
No, he said at last. I guess I won't.
Arya re-entered King's Pyre the same way she had left it and stole up the winding steps, listening for footfalls. In her cell, she stripped to the skin and dressed herself carefully in 2 layers of small clothes, warm stockings, and her cleanest tunic. It was Lord Bolton's livery. On the breast was sewn his sigil, the flayed man of the Dreadfort. She tied her shoes, threw a wool cloak over her skinny shoulders, and knotted it under her throat. Quiet as a shadow, she moved back down the stairs. Outside the Lord Solar, she paused to listen at the door, easing it open slowly when she heard only silence. The sheepskin map was on the table, beside the remains of Lord Bolton's supper. She rolled it up tight and thrust it through her belt. He'd left his dagger on the table as well, so she took that too, just in case Gendry lost his courage. A horse neighed softly as she slipped into the darkened stables. The grooms were all asleep. She prodded one with her toe until he sat up groggily and said,
"Eh? Was?"
Lord Bolton requires 3 horses saddled and bridled. The boy got to his feet, pushing straw from his hair.
"What? At this hour? Horses, you say?"
He blinked at the sigil on her tunic.
"What's he want horses for, in the dark?"
Lord Bolton is not in the habit of being questioned by servants. She crossed her arms. The stable boy was still looking at the flayed man. He knew what it meant.
3, you say?
1, 2, 3. Hunting horses, fast and surefoot. Arya helped him with the bridles and saddles, so he would not need to wake any of the others. She hoped they would not hurt him afterwards, but she knew they probably would. Leading the horses across the castle was the worst part. She stayed in the shadow of the curtain wall whenever she could, so the sentries walking their rounds on the ramparts above would have needed to look almost straight down to see her. And if they do, what of it? I'm my lord's own cupbearer. It was a chill, dank autumn night. Clouds were blowing in from the west, hiding the stars, and the wailing tower screamed mournfully at every gust of wind. It smells like rain. Arya did not know whether that would be good or bad for their escape. No one saw her, and she saw no one. Only a grey and white cat creeping along atop the guardswood wall. It stopped and spit at her, waking memories of the Red Keep and her father and Sirio Forel. I could catch you if I wanted, she called to it softly. But I have to go, cat. The cat hissed and ran off. The Tower of Ghosts was the most ruinous of Harrenhal's five immense towers. It stood dark and desolate behind the remains of a collapsed sept, where only rats had come to prey for near 300 years. It was there she waited to see if Gendry and Hot Pie would come. It seemed as though she waited a long time. The horses nibbled at the weeds that grew up between the broken stones, while the clouds swallowed the last of the stars. Arya took out the dagger and sharpened it to keep her hands busy. Long, smooth strokes, the way Sirio had taught her. The sound calmed her. She heard them coming long before she saw them. Hot Pie was breathing heavily, and once he stumbled in the dark, barked his shin, and cursed loud enough to wake half of Harrenhal. Gendry was quieter, but the swords he was carrying rang together as he moved. Here I am, she stood. Be quiet, or they'll hear you. The boys picked their way toward her over tumbled stones. Gendry was wearing oiled chainmail under his cloak, she saw, and he had his blacksmith's hammer slung across his back. Hot Pie's red, round face peered out from under a hood. He had a sack of bread dangling from his right hand and a big wheel of cheese under his left arm. There's a guard on that postern, said Gendry quietly. I told you there would be. You stay here with the horses, said Arya. I'll get rid of him. Come quick when I call. Gendry nodded. Hot Pie said, Hoot like an owl when you want us to come. I'm not an owl, said Arya. I'm a wolf. I'll howl. Alone, she slid through the shadow of the Tower of Ghosts. She walked fast to keep ahead of her fear. And it felt as though Sirio Forel walked beside her, and Yorin, and Jaqen H'ghar, and Jon Snow. She had not taken the sword Gendry had brought her, not yet. For this, the dagger would be better. It was good and sharp. This postern was the least of Harrenhal's gates, a narrow door of stout oak, studded with iron nails, set in an angle of the wall beneath a defensive tower. Only one man was set to guard it, but she knew there would be sentries up in that tower as well, and others nearby walking the walls. Whatever happened, she must be quiet as a shadow. He must not call out. A few scattered raindrops had begun to fall. She felt one land on her brow and run slowly down her nose. She made no effort to hide, but approached the guard openly, as if Lord Bolton himself had sent her. He watched her come, curious as to what might bring a page here at this black hour. When she got closer, she saw that he was a Northman, very tall and thin, huddled in a ragged fur cloak. That was bad. She might have been able to trick a Frey or one of the brave companions, but the Dreadfort men had served Roose Bolton their whole life, and they knew him better than she did. If I tell him I am Arya Stark, and command him to stand aside. No, she dare not. He was a Northman, but not a Winterfell man. He belonged to Roose Bolton. When she reached him, she pushed back her cloak so he would see the flayed man on her breast. Lord Bolton sent me. At this hour? Why for? She could see the gleam of steel under the fur, and she did not know if she was strong enough to drive the point of the dagger through the chainmail. His throat. It must be his throat. But he's too tall. I'll never reach it. For a moment, she did not know what to say. For a moment, she was a little girl again and scared, and the rain on her face felt like tears. He told me to give all his guards a silver piece for their good service. The word seemed to come out of nowhere.
Silver, you say?
He did not believe her, but he wanted to. Silver was silver, after all.
Give it over, then.
Her fingers dug down beneath her tunic and came out clutching the coin Jaqen had given her. In the dark, the iron could pass for tarnished silver. She held it out and let it slip through her fingers. Cursing her softly, the man went to a knee to grope for the coin